Good evening, and welcome to From Out of the City for June 9th, 2007. This is my daughter Paralandra's 26th birthday. Happy birthday, Perry. I know you're enjoying yourself today. You and your mother are off at the Grand Canyon. So have a good time, and remember your father loves you very much. And those of you out there who regularly listen to this program know I haven't done one in a few weeks. I've not been lazy, and I've not been distracted. I've just been busy with a lot of aspects of life. As I record this program, there's a new kitten sitting about 10 feet away from me. I got it for my boys, and they named her Ariel. Cute little orange tabby. And hopefully she'll grow up to be sane. Cats kind of break either way on me. I was hoping this weekend to be in Texas at the Texas Panhandle Writers Association Frontiers in Writing convention, for which I had served as a chapbook judge. Unfortunately, family matters arose that made it impossible, but I am hoping to go next year, meet with some of my readers, and do some readings and whatnot. Also, we're back on track making plans for the world record attempt for the world's longest reading by a poet or author of their own works, longest continuous reading. And once we get pre-certification from the Guinness people, we're going to try and schedule that for probably August of this year. And the kind people at Barnes & Noble in Morgantown, West Virginia, have requested that I do the reading for them at their bookstore, and they've been so kind to me in the past, I can't see why not. So that'll probably be the site, and I'll let you know as more evolves down the road. Now, on to the topic of poetry. I'm not going to do pre-release performances of any of the poems from my very new book, She Shines. I'm hoping to have that book out in the fall time frame. But I'm not leaking anything. I know that EJ on his blog, amamancer.blogspot.com, leaked a few fragments. No, this one's sticking with me. Not since probably the Golden Heart cycles, back in 95, 96, have I written something this spontaneously, this consistent, of this size. I was very gratified to find out I still had that in me, and gratified at the result. And I do want to share it, but I want to share it in its own frame. And initially that means as written material, not as oral interp. I love oral interp. I love spoken word. I'm contributing a short story or two to an upcoming book that is being distributed to high school students. Stories that are designed to be read aloud. And I'll fill you in on that project a little more down the road. I've got some upcoming guests. Yes, we're going to get back to having guests on the program. And I'll have more information for you next week. I promise to do the show next week. Again, I know I took a couple weeks off. Couldn't be helped. Just so much going on. I just didn't have the emotional energy to do the show. This show actually takes a lot of energy. Sitting here in Studio C in suburban Washington, D.C., Studio A, some of you may know, has packed its bags and left Morgantown, West Virginia, where it was located. My good friend, Alan McDonald, who I've known since eighth grade. Alan and I were best friends in junior high. He grew up to be an extraordinary musician. One North Carolina magazine dubbed him the fifth Beatle because of his knowledge of the Beatles, and indeed he used to correspond with a couple of them. I think he still corresponds with one. I won't say which one. And I know he'd be embarrassed to hear me say this, but Alan is brilliant. He's a great guy, and I'm glad to have rediscovered him in my adulthood. Because he's just a terrific human being. And terrific human beings are good to come across. It's been a gratifying week. I had a friend of mine confessed that they had recently harbored thoughts of suicide, but that somehow, directly or indirectly, my counsel turned them around on that. I hope they do seek professional help, because I'm far from an expert on that topic. And then an old friend of mine I've worked with for many, many years, Eric, I won't give his last name. He's a musician and he's in the technology field. And we've worked together before as peers and he's managed me. We were having lunch the other day and telling stories of what's been going on in our lives over the last decade or so, because we've known each other for longer than that. And I was telling him a story about somebody who had issues with me. And he just looked at me odd, and I said, "What?" And he says, "I can't imagine anybody ever having an issue with you." And I said, "Why not?" He says, "Because you're the most fundamentally decent human being probably I know." And I don't know whether to take that to mean that he only hangs out with like the absolute scum of the earth, or that he considers me a decent human being. The truth of the matter is, for all the occasional roguishness in my reputation, I don't believe in malice. There was a time when I did. But having seen what malice does to people in acquaintances and former lovers and whatnot, I just don't have room for that baggage in my life. It's malignant, it's malign, and it's certainly a poison I do not want to put in my belly, because it eats you out from inside. And please, if you have one bit of control over your worldview, try and put hatred and resentment away from yourself, because it's no good. It gets you through a rough spot here and there, but in the long run, it's toxic, and it accomplishes nothing. People who hate, they're missing the whole point. There are three primary colors to my palette, I believe, as a writer, and those are love, fear, and what I call rage. Rage rather than hatred, because hatred is automatically to me a bad word. Rage means passion, and that passion can be pro or con, just as fear can drive you to do something pro or con, and love can drive you to do something pro or con. Hatred is a negative word. There's a lot of hatred in the world, but there's always a motive, there's always a vector to it, and it usually comes from anger or distrust or fear. The concept of evil I sometimes laugh at. We hear politicians all the time bandering around, "These people or those people are evil." You know what? There's almost no evil people in the world. There are people whose purposes cross your own. But when I hear a politician say, "Such and such group wants to destroy us because they're evil," I almost choke, because these people think they're doing the good thing. I've met very few people in this life who would sit back and say, "Hey, I'm evil, and I'm glad I'm evil, and I want to be evil." It doesn't work that way. People are across purposes. And if you have to believe someone's evil, and if you have to hate them in order to contend with them, you're missing the whole point. You're truly undermining yourself as a person. Your emotional health and your spirituality are both at risk and at question. So that's just me babbling on for a few moments there. Now let's get to the poetry. There's a piece of mine called Penny Arcade, and I've got to tell you the backstory on this piece. Many years ago, I and my fiance, Nancy, God love her, probably the best person I've been stupid enough to lose out of my life, were down at Disney World. And I don't know if they still have it, but at the time, they had a Penny Arcade, a real Penny Arcade, which has all the little pre-pinball amusements that you used to be able to go and drop a coin into. Yes, pre-pinball even. having been a little bit of a pinball hustler in college, you know, it kind of even boggled my mind that there was stuff before pinball. But they had all these things that you just put a penny in to play a game or something. And I saw this one called St. George and the Dragon. And it had this little diorama of a dragon and a knight on horseback. And it said, put in your penny and grab the handles. Hold on until the knight slays the dragon. So, okay, boom, drop in my penny, grab the handles, and immediately I'm being electrocuted. It's sending an electric charge through my arms, through my body, and as the knight moves across the diorama, way too slowly for my taste, closing in on the dragon, the charge gets, the current gets more powerful and more powerful. And I was never in any real health risk, but it was like tingling really violently. And I was not going to let go. I had to hang on. So as soon as the lance hit the knight, there was a bell and the current stopped and the knight withdrew. And I was happy. And I didn't put money in any more of the penny arcade things because I was like, who knows, you know, the next one might have a giant spiked hammer. I don't know. But just a few years ago, I was thinking about that moment, and an idea occurred to me for a poem called Penny Arcade. And here it is. Life is a penny arcade where you drop your dirty copper moments, trace moments into the slot of chance and seize the handles. Waiting for the raw shock that challenges your will and tests your desire to win. Nothing more than bragging rights. Then you step right up to the next machine, the metaphor with more neon and a sign that reads, try your luck 2 cents, and grab the handles. I was amazed at how many people I saw in there who were working with playing the games like St. George and the Dragon and would continue doing them. You know, it's like people who ride mechanical bulls at a urban cowboy bar and get all banged up and then get on it again, and all they're really playing for is bragging rights, a little self-esteem. Or they're truly masochistic. I guess it does happen. But the whole point is that's what life is like. Life is a series of penny arcade moments. They're not necessarily good, they're not necessarily bad, but we step up to the challenges, and whatever our motives, we try to see them through. An old friend of mine once said that he lived firm in the belief that everybody does what they do for a payoff, even if you can't understand what the payoff is. And I've come to understand he's pretty much right. I try not to be cynical about it, but he was pretty much right in that regard. The next poem up is a piece of mine called Tip for Tap. The origin of the title comes from an article I read by Cecil Adams, the gentleman who does the newspaper column The Straight Dope, in which he was asking a question about the phrase, somebody was asking a question about the phrase tit for tat. And tit for tat is actually a bastardization of the phrase tip for tap, talking about a trading of punches or blows. Much of our common colloquial phraseology that doesn't make sense, turns out once you get back to its roots, makes perfect sense. But I was just playing with the phrase tip for tap, and this phrase caught fire, and I wrote this poem. And it's a strange little poem in that it seems to be a confession of being a manipulative bastard, which I don't think I am. Certainly, I have on more than one occasion declined the opportunity to be a manipulative bastard. I have always dealt in some frustration with individuals who want to accuse me of some kind of deep, dark motive when sometimes I'm just plain incompetent. We used to have a little question we'd bounce around philosophically when I worked for Computer Sciences Corporation, I and a few friends. It was, would you rather be perceived as evil or incompetent? Because I have a belief that a lot of what we consider evil in this world is merely incompetence masked by ego. People, rather than admitting they just plain screwed up, will accept the fact that, will accept the label of being evil. I can't tell you how many times someone has told me, you did this, you're a bad person. I'm like, no, I screwed up. And they can't believe that I just plain screwed up. I have to confess, or at least in their own mind, I have to accept the notion that I'm evil before they'll let it drop. Do we really live in a world where everything has to be painted white and black? I don't know. But it is rather confusing to me. But anyway, this piece, Tip for Tap, just came out as wordplay, and I'm sure there are going to be people who read into it, you know, that I'm admitting that I've done something horrible. It's actually just a lot of wordplay. So please enjoy it. It's called Tip for Tap. Tip for tap, the crush and thrust of contact made, displayed, paraded in a prayed-for instinct of distinction. Run red, the heart is bled. Run red, the heart is bled. And all that I have said is to get you into bed. Chaste chasings on the framework of folly, ornate to innate feelings, irate thought sensors sent packing. Run red, the heart is bled. Run red, the heart is bled. And all my passions dead, awake to mourners, fled. Crimson lips to solferino folds, gold to the barter. The starter's pistol for my heart discharges rainbows. Run red, the heart is bled. Run red, the heart is bled. And these thoughts are all wed by a weaving of romantic's thread. Tip for tap, the crush and thrust of contact made, displayed, paraded in a prayed-for instinct of distinction. So is that poem confessing deep, dark evil? No. I have very strong rules about what I can and cannot do, what I can and cannot say, what situations I will and will not accept in terms of a seduction. You're talking to a man who's been on the celibate road for a little while, because I won't accept less than something meaningful and loving with a potential for permanence. I've been there, and I didn't like it. But that's me. That's just who I am and what I am. And whether or not I've always been this way or not, I always perceive that I have been most of my life. But anyway, that's just part of my concept of romanticism. So I'd like to thank you for dropping by this evening. Thank you for listening to me. Perry, again, happy birthday. May you have a billion more and never want for anything. Love you very, very much. Once again, this is William F. DeVault, the romantic poet of the internet, and you've been listening to From Out of the City.